Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Hello, 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 and welcome back here to CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Vivian, and this is Speak Up. I have a very, very interesting topic for you today. I will talk about the Willow Project. It was newly approved by Joe Biden, and for that, I also invited a very special guest, and we are going to hear, some information about the Willow Project, what's the Willow Project in general, what's the background of it, and how are communities and wildlife in Alaska affected. And yeah, my special guest today is Clifford Adleo, and do you want to introduce yourself for our listeners?
Sure, thanks. My I have several names. My English name, of course, is Clifford Adleo, and I'm an assistant professor in the School of Resource and Environmental Management here at SFU. And I'm also Nunchonalth and Tsimshian. So my father's from the west coast of Vancouver Island, and we're from the community of Ahauset. And I carry the name Chachimuthni, which is my Nunchonalth name, and we're from the house of Glockishpeel. On my mother's side, I'm Tsimshian, so a little bit further up the coast on the Skeena River from a community called Kitsilas. And actually, I got my mug here from Wapsnese Haiwas. This is our house in Kitsilas territory. And I carry two names there, Gamayam and Samoyget Nisnaya.
Yeah, very beautiful up there. I would love to visit more of Vancouver Island. I've been there, I think, twice. And yeah, I'm so excited that you are here today and will answer us some questions because you are an expert in that field. And I know that many people don't know about the Willow Project, and also that's, especially if people here in Canada are not really familiar with it. And we had TMX, or still have, but the Willow Project is happening in Alaska, and that's why I'm glad that you could tell me some stuff about it, or can tell me some stuff about it. And I would like to play, first of all, I would like to play a video on you that I found on YouTube. It's by BBC News, and it's, I think it was, 1 month ago, so when the Willow Project was approved, and I think that was one of the first news that was ever about the Willow Project. I would like to play it before I will give you more information. So, listen to the news, and then we can talk more about the Willow Project.
The American President Joe Biden has approved a major oil and gas drilling project in Alaska that faced strong opposition from environmental activists. The company behind the Willow Project, ConocoPhillips, says it will create local investment and thousands of jobs. Opponents argue it should be halted over its climate and wildlife impacts. Located on Alaska's remote North Slope, it is the largest oil project in the region for decades, and it is expected to produce up to 180,000 barrels of oil a day. Well, let's speak to Esme Stallard, who is our environment correspondent. She's been following the story. It's interesting, this, because there are two sides to this story. On the one hand, he's just imposed limits on oil and gas drilling on about 60 million acres of Alaska. And on the other hand, he's just given the green light to one of the biggest oil projects in the country in decades. How does this help him meet his net zero targets?
Yeah, it seems a bit conflicting, doesn't it? I mean, the agreement to go forward with the Willow Project did put some limits on the initial proposal. So ConocoPhillips wanted to have 5 drilling sites. The Bureau for Land Management, which agreed the go-ahead for the project, has agreed to scale down that slightly to 3 drilling pads. But environmental activists have said this will produce many millions of tons of CO2, which could hinder the ability of America to meet its climate targets. But Biden and his administration have said that this smaller scale down version, and also the fact that there'll be measures put in place to capture some of the carbon, means that they can still meet their intermediate climate targets.
Yes, the equivalent of putting an extra 2 million cars on the road, according to some estimates. He will be accused, of course, of bowing to the oil and gas lobby. But then he is under pressure in a cost of living crisis to keep down prices at the pump.
Exactly. He's very much concerned with the rising cost of fuel, and he's hoping that by securing some of this oil more locally within the US, it will help to secure that energy supply and keep costs down. There's also a question around local revenue for people in Alaska. There's real issues around employment and job opportunity there, and they're heavily reliant on the oil and gas sector. Some 85% of their revenue locally sometimes can come from this sector. And across the board, both Republican and Democrat representatives locally had been pushing Biden to agree the project.
It is interesting, as you say, that the congressional group, Alaska's congressional group, and a number of the Alaskan native tribes do see this as an important source of revenue. It's, of course, it's geographically, it's very isolated. There isn't much work, not much income there.
Exactly. So there's some, the local Native Alaskans are known as the Inupiat. Some of them are very supportive of it. So we have local mayors from Wainwright and others who have spoken to us and said this will bring needed revenue, needed jobs for local people, while still enabling them to maintain their way of life. But there's also been locals from the nearby town of New Ixit, which is the most locally central town to this new development, who have said they're seriously concerned about it disrupting their way of life, about disrupting the migration patterns of some local animals and affecting their whaling season. So it's not straightforward locally by any means. And actually, we've been told today that they are considering direct action, those local Alaskan natives that aren't in support of the project.
Esme Salah, thank you very much for that. Thank you.
Yeah, we are back here on CDSF 90.1 FM, and this was a video I found. I think it was the first video I watched about the Willow Project, because I actually found out about it on social media. So it was happening, or it started in 1999, and now out of the sudden it exploded on social media, and people were complaining about it, people made TikToks about it, and that's why so many people finally knew about it and it got the attention that it needed. And yeah, what do you think about that video? What were your first thoughts when you heard or saw this video?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that they hint at some of the complexity, and this is not something that used to be as common before some of the more recent local issues that came up related to this, for example, the Trans Mountain Pipeline or the Coastal GasLink pipeline. You're starting to get a little bit more of a nuanced analysis. And this is also happening during a time where we're supposedly in this transition away from a post-carbon economy. And like to bring it back to the local example of TMX, for example, you know, there was a time a few years ago where I thought that the market had killed TMX, like not protesters or not, you know, legislation or anything like that. But the cost of, or the price of oil from the oil sands had reached somewhere in the neighborhood of about $5 a barrel in 2020. Mm-hmm. And you just can't make money when it's that much. There was a news story about a company that was storing the diluted bitumen and was actually paying people to take it away because they couldn't stop the process. Mm. So it was more urgent for them to get rid of it. And then normally where they would sell it, they were actually paying people to take it away. So we had hit that point just after the pandemic began. And then, of course, if you go back to last year, Russia invades Ukraine, and it just changes the whole game again in terms of sort of global oil politics and Europe needing a secure, you know, many regions needing a secure source of oil. And so all of these projects, I think, are kind of back on again, despite the fact, you know, that we were quite strongly headed towards a decarbonized economy. Certain events like a war
Yeah.
can impact these decisions.
Yeah, and I mean, so I was listening, that's true, and I was listening to a podcast yesterday about the Willa Project, and they were talking about that actually the Willa Project will actually start in 10 years, so they still have to work on that before it's actually going to happen, so we will not have the oil there in within 10 years, so... do we really need that much oil right now? And I heard that there's a crisis in America and that the oil is very expensive. So, that's the question. And also that ConocoPhillips, which is the Willa Project, is operated by ConocoPhillips, and that they said it's only the first. It's the first project that haven't planned, but. They want to do more projects, so this is only the beginning. And I was asking myself, do we really need that much oil? And is it really that worth it? I mean, we have so many projects here in Canada. We have so many projects in America. And I mean, you were right with the war, and oil is much more needed than in 2020. But I can't really see the point behind it. But I mean, if you look on the economy and all of the other things, it is true. And also they said that many local communities need the jobs. And do you think that true? Like, do they depend on such oil projects, or is there another way to survive? Do they really need that project? I mean, so many news said, yeah, the local communities really want that project because it will provide jobs and a way to make money. Is that true? Do you think they really need that project to actually survive?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of things. I want to back up and say that, given what I said about the timelines and certain events that can change globally, mm-hmm. if the oil is not going to come, become like enter the marketplace for another 10 years, let's see if it's even another 5 years. In the United States, they're dealing with a seriously divided country between the Republicans and the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And I think the Democrats are vulnerable to the Republicans winning the next election, which is going to come up in the next 2 years. And doing something like not approving this project in the short term may be a political move, mm-hmm. because they don't want to sort of endure the wrath of people responding to that would be pro-oil. But again, it's not just issues about, government regulation or approval. As I mentioned, the oil sands in Canada, for a brief period of time became unviable, like completely unviable. And so they may be positioning this approval now, recognizing that 3 years from now, the company itself may pull out. Because if they can't get the price per barrel that they need, then it won't be a viable project. So mm-hmm. there is that possibility. And, of course, that's just hypothesizing. but to answer your second question around jobs, I mean, this is one of the things that we see in Trans Mountain, in Coastal GasLink, the Dakota Access Pipeline that issue blew up in around 2016, 2017. That we really see is you see Indigenous communities on both sides of this, communities that are opposing it and communities that are supporting it. And unfortunately, one of the things that we've seen, historically, of course, is loss of traditional livelihoods in Indigenous communities. And in North America here, that impact, if you will, has been more recent for Northern communities. So whereas the first settlers arrived on the eastern part of the continent, let's say 400 years ago, those Indigenous peoples have been, again, dealing with settlers mm-hmm. for literally centuries. Captain Cook didn't arrive here in British Columbia until 1778, so almost a full, more than 200 years later. And then even in the north, if we think about, Indigenous peoples both in Alaska and Yukon and Northwest Territories, the impacts of colonization have not been as significant until the 20th century. So until, other resource discoveries, diamonds, uranium, World War II, sort of the mm-hmm. concern with the North has not been until recent. So you do have people up there that have, for longer periods, been able to sustain themselves through their traditional livelihoods. But again, that has become more imperiled in the last 50 years. And so you often have situations where communities no longer have that kind of access. You know, many of them have been relocated for various reasons. There was one article I was reading about, you know, a lack of running water, clean water. And, of course, there are the impacts on the tundra, the permafrost, caribou, polar bear, which are really big global issues that relate to when we're talking in decades in terms of climate change. But certainly the, again, to answer your question in the affirmative is yes, that there are immediate sort of ways in which communities need to put food on their table and they're left with limited opportunities. Yeah. So I think that's an important part of the issues is that they're in difficult situations.
Yeah, it is a difficult situation because I also read during my research, I found out that the town or the village that is most affected by the Willow Project, so the native village of the Nuksu, is most affected. And because they're concerned because of air pollution, water pollution, and also because they can't really practice their traditional hunting because... like as already said, musk ox, Arctic fox, wolves, grizzly, polar bears, moose, seals, whales, walruses, and many other important animals are cannot be or cannot live there, and especially the caribous, which they live from. So it's their food, and they hunt there. So they can't really practice it anymore because of the Willow Project and because of the the environmental issues. And when the Willow Project will really happen there, then the caribous will probably not be there anymore. So they don't have a food source. And that's what you said. And they need other ways to survive, and then they need their jobs. So it's kind of, it's a difficult situation. It's hard to describe. And they're most of concern and actually oppose the project because they're scared that they will lose their homes. Due to the air pollution, the water pollution, and the hunting or food situation in general. And I also read that there was an incident happening, I think it happened last year, where they actually already have one oil pad there, so ConocoPhillips, and it leaked. So it polluted the water and the air, and then one indigenous community had to move because of this leak, and it's already harming the environment in Alaska. So we should be aware of that. And actually, ConocoPhillips is planning to build four more oil pads there. And it's a very difficult topic. And I was also wondering, you're also dealing with a lot of indigenous communities in the way of life. Do you know anything about the indigenous communities that live in Alaska?
Not specifically, other than I, you know, like I said, you know, up until fairly recently, a large amount of their subsistence came from the land, in particular hunting. Mm-hmm. And I know that one of the articles I read, interview with an Alaska state representative, so somebody who was elected to the Alaska state government, but he was also a whaler. And there was an occasion where Deb Halland, who is a Laguna Pueblo indigenous woman from the south, and she's also the Secretary of the Interior, where they were trying to organize a meeting between the two. And it was kind of a funny situation where, you know, she had Secret Service security and they wouldn't go to meet because they couldn't be given an address. And he was saying the address is like the, he wanted her to witness sort of the, you know, the capture of this whale. And he's like, it's on the ice. It's, there's no specific address.
Yeah.
So it was a really interesting clash between these, you know, worldviews and realities. And also the fact that you have an indigenous woman who has risen to quite a high cabinet position in the United States. And so none of this is straightforward or simple. I was interested in the fact that they were traditional whaling community as well, because where my father's from, the Ahauset and the New Chanoth are among the only coastal peoples here on the west coast of North America to hunt for whales. and then the issue with pipelines and such is always also complicated because as opposed to, say, a specific mine site, you know, it could be, I don't know, let's say 5 square kilometers or a certain range where they're mining for copper or gold. The case with the Trans Mountain Pipeline, for example, they had to negotiate impact benefit agreements all the way from northern Alberta all the way across the province down into British Columbia. And not only just to here, where the Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh and Musqueam are, but also out around the island, because the impact is where they're, you know, where they're obtaining the diluted bitumen, how they're transporting it, and then putting it onto boats and shipping it, you know, somewhere else to be refined. Mm-hmm. So it impacts a whole bunch of people. And it's way more complicated to negotiate those impact benefit agreements over a project that is so wide reaching.
Yeah, for sure. And I was actually surprised because when I did my research, I found out, as you already said, that Mariel Tola, I think is her name, it's Alaska's first native ever elected in Congress. And she is actually in favor of the Willow Project. So she is not against it. And she supports it because she thinks that it will provide jobs and food and for the indigenous communities. So I think I read, so the Willow Project will provide 2,500 jobs, and the 50% of the money goes to the state of Alaska, so $5 billion, and especially the communities that are most affected, so the Nukusku, and $4 million goes to the state in general. But in 2053, so in 30 years, which is so far away, and the Willow Project isn't now approved, but now we still have to wait for 10 years that it will actually happen. So that's the thing. Like, it's so, if you look on it, it's like in 30 years we will have the oil and the money, but is it now? We need oil now. We need the food now. We need the money now. So is it really worth it? And as ConocoPhillips already said, it's only the beginning, but we already have so many oil sources. So do we really need another project in Alaska? Because Alaska is already so affected. And I also heard that they have to refrost the permafrost because Alaska is warming up. It's getting warmer and warmer every year. And this is the question I have, like, is it really worth it to refrost the permafrost so that it will warm up again? And it's actually so, so dangerous. It's a whole other story about how the permafrost can affect us. But where do you see, I have a bunch of pro and contra arguments here, but where do you see pro and contra arguments in such a project if you think about not only about the Willow Project, but also TMX?
Yeah, it's... I mean, to your first comment, you know, I don't have any empirical data on this, but it's probably safe to say most of the Native people up there support the project. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I don't think ideologically or philosophically that this is an issue of pure necessity on their part in terms of the changes and impacts on their livelihoods. They need some source of revenue, and this is one of those potential sources. In terms of, like, some of my training is in political science, but I'm a notoriously bad predictor about what's going to happen. And, you know, I do suspect, though, that this current approval, it doesn't go into, like, it takes a long time for them to get. One article I read, for example, suggested that they can't construct after April. And so we're already here now in April. The ground gets too soft. And so it becomes more expensive for them to start now. And if they can be delayed for the current, season, they have to wait till next year, or they have to wait at least 6 months till it starts to get colder again. And I do suspect, like I said, there is going to be another coming presidential election in a year and a half, that this could be a political move that they will count on the social, political, economic context changing enough to kill it later on. And part of the reason, you know, one of the things that Biden's been criticized for is being hypocritical, because so his administration obviously is in favor of a Green New Deal of some sort, shifting to transition to a post-carbon economy. And in the, what's it called, the Inflation Reduction Act that passed, it was last year, included billions and billions of dollars in investments and subsidies for renewable energy. So you look at these two in a very simplistic way, and you're like, how could they approve both things? But again, they're dealing with a very, a project in the north, a project that both Republicans and Democrats and probably most of the indigenous peoples there are supporting. So you're like, it doesn't help for me to say no at this point, but we could be going into a time, over the next 5 to 10 years of this transition where more and more people start saying, no, this is where we're going, and we're solidly going in that direction, which would drive the demand for oil down and the cost of oil down, which makes these projects less viable. Mm-hmm. But again, like I said, I'm notoriously wrong at trying to say what's going to happen in 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
But these are potential dynamics that could play out.
Yeah, actually, I have to be honest. When I first heard about the Willow Project, I was so, so angry and disappointed in Joe Biden, because when he was elected, he promised that he will protect the environment and that there will be no more oil drilling projects. And now he kind of broke his promises. So many, many people that elected him, especially the new generation, Gen Z, elected him because of these promises. And they were really disappointed in him that he broke these promises by approving this project. But actually, according to several legal experts, the Biden administration might have had its hand tied because actually ConocoPhillips owned the license to do this project since 1999, and Joe Biden was obviously not the president, and he tried to actually reduce the Willow Project. So he reduced the needed water, he will eliminate 100 miles of roads, 20 miles of pipelines, 133 acres of gravel, and 68,000 acres of land will be returned to federal government, so will not be used for the Willow Project. So he reduced the size of the project, but we have to say this is not a permanent protection. It could change when the new when the election is coming up. So in 2 years, I guess. And actually, first, the Willow Project was approved by the Biden administration, so the 5PET project. And then in 2021, the District Court of Alaska revoked the license for three reasons. They didn't consider the greenhouse gas emissions. They assumed that they had access to all possible oil, which is not true. And no maximum protection for sensitive four areas. So we have four areas that are considered as sensitive, and they will not build the oil pads there, but they didn't consider those four areas in their plans. And then 2023, the Willow Project was approved by Joe Biden because I think his hands were tied, as I already said. It's a hard decision to make as a president, and he tried to reduce, the project and reduce the size of the project, but this is not permanent. So we will not know what's going to happen in 2 years. So that's why it's really hard to predict what is going to happen in the future. It might be approved again or supported again in 2 years, or will be even go bigger. You will never know. So it's hard to decide and what to think. So that's why I would like to speak about it. And actually, during my research, I found out that so many people don't know about the Willow Project at all. And I think it's very important to educate people and to raise awareness what's going to happen. And that's why I'm talking about that here, to make a change. And I work at the radio, so what can I do? I can host a show and talk about it and inform the people about it, because when I talk to my friends, when I talk to my family, nobody really knew about the project. And I think that's the same with TMX. I mean, it was all over the news, but I think people kind of start to forget, because when we're not going to continue to talk about it, then people will forget about it. And I think that's a problem. What do you think about that? So how can we raise more awareness? How can we make a change when it comes to indigenous communities, climate, and our environment?
Yeah, I mean, it's You know, I mean, TMX was a little bit different in the sense that, you know, it's coming into Vancouver. It was one of the rare, I think, issues where, you know, you had Tsleil-Waututh, you had Squamish Nation that were opposing it, and you also had the City of Burnaby and City of Vancouver that were supporting that legal action. So it wasn't just Indigenous peoples or environmental activists alone. Almost everybody here was thinking, why do we need this?